Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So this evening we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 10 entitled The Opulence of the Absolute, text 3. Yo mama jamadyanim cha veti loka maheshwaram asamuda samatyeshu sarva prappai pramuchyate yo mama jamanadim cha veti loka maheshwaram asamuda samatyeshu sarva papai pramuchyate. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, S.T. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the Supreme Lord of all the worlds, he only, undeluded among men, is freed from all sins. Purport. As stated in the 7th chapter, 7.3, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschidyatati siddhayem, those who are trying to elevate themselves to the platform of spiritual realization are not ordinary men. They are superior to millions and millions of ordinary men who have no knowledge of spiritual realization. But of those actually trying to understand their spiritual situation, one who can come to the understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the proprietor of everything, the unborn, is the most successful spiritually realized person. In that stage only, when one has fully understood Krishna's supreme position, one can be freed completely from all sinful reactions. Here the Lord is described by the word aja, meaning unborn. But he is distinct from the living entities who are described in the second chapter as aja. The Lord is different from the living entities who are taking birth and dying due to material attachment. The conditioned souls are changing their bodies, but his body is not changeable. Even when he comes to this material world, he comes as the same, unborn. Therefore, in the 4th chapter, it is said that the Lord, by his internal potency, is not under the inferior material energy, but is always in the superior energy. In these words, the word Veti Loka Maheshwaram indicates that one should know that Lord Krishna is the supreme proprietor of all the planetary systems of the universe. He was existing before the creation, and he is different from his creation. All the demigods were created within this material world, but as far as Krishna is concerned, it is said that he is not created. Therefore, Krishna is different even from the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. And because he is creator of Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods, he is the supreme person of all the planets. Sri Krishna is therefore different from everything that is created, and anyone who knows him as such immediately becomes liberated from all sinful reactions. One must be liberated from all sinful activities to be in the knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Only by devotional service he can be known, and not by any other means, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. One should not try to understand Krishna as human being, as a human being. As stated previously, only a foolish person thinks him to be a human being. This is again expressed here in a different way. A man who is not foolish, who is intelligent enough to understand the constitutional position of the Godhead, is always free from all sinful reaction. If Krishna is known as the son of Devaki, then how can he be unborn? That is also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. When he appeared before Devaki and Vasudev, he was not born as an ordinary child. He appeared in his original form, and then he transferred himself into an ordinary child. Anything done under the direction of Krishna is transcendental. It cannot be contaminated by material reactions, which may be auspicious or inauspicious. The conception that there are things auspicious and inauspicious in material world is more or less a mental concoction, because there is nothing auspicious in the material world. Everything is inauspicious, because the very material nature is inauspicious. We simply imagine it to be auspicious. Real auspiciousness depends on activities in Krishna consciousness in full devotion and service. Therefore, if we at all want our activities to be auspicious, then we should work under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Such directions are given in authoritative scriptures such as Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, or from a bona fide spiritual master. Because the spiritual master is the representative of the Supreme Lord, his direction is directly the direction of the Supreme Lord. The spiritual master, saintly persons, and the scriptures direct in the same way. There is no contradiction in these three sources. All actions done under such direction are free from the reactions of pious and impious activities of this material world. The transcendental attitude of the devotee in the performance of activities is actually that of renunciation, and that is called sannyas. As stated in the first verse of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, one who acts as a matter of duty because he has been ordered to do so by the Supreme Lord, and who does not seek shelter in the fruits of his activities, anashrita karma phalam, is a true renouncer. Anyone acting under the direction of the Supreme Lord is actually a sannyasi and a yogi, and not the man who has simply taken the dress of the sannyasi or a pseudo-yogi. So this verse points out the fact that Krishna is having very particular position in this same manifested and also definitely in the unmanifested creation. He is described by the different in a different ways, just in order to point out his uniqueness compared to any other living entities. Of course, initially we should understand that there is a very strong comparison, or it is very strongly pointed out in the scriptures that living entities and the Supreme Lord definitely are in many ways equal. But again, in many places in the scriptures, we also have to understand, it is pointed out as well, that they are not equal. That equalness, it is referred, equalness in a quality. But again, when we speak about unequalness between the living entity and the Lord, this is referred in quantity. And there are many different reasons how we can understand, and that is specifically pointed out here in Bhagavad Gita, especially by Krishna himself, how the differentiation can be very easily understood between the living entity, the ordinary living jiva, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, we actually avoid any kind of confusion that can be created by getting in touch with the spiritual literature, because here, as we understood, initially Krishna says here in Prabhupada, actually, I'm sorry, in the purport mentions that there are so many living entities, but very rarely actually one comes to understand who Supreme Personality of Godhead is. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddha yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvataha. It's very rare. Even those who are interested in self-realization and they take to the process of spiritual path, they may have some, of course, different kinds of motivation to enter into the spiritual path and practicing spiritual path. But even amongst them, very rarely one becomes actually interested in real spiritual enlightenment. And even amongst those who are kind of interested in who get to that particular position, hardly any of those become a devotee of Krishna. And being a devotee of Krishna definitely is the highest possible position, because only at that particular position one comes to understand his real natural position in this in a relationship definitely with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and definitely in understanding of his true nature and the position, again, even in this material world. Because only in that way the living entity can understand how to act properly and how to really be properly situated. And as it is said here in the verse itself, undeluded. Because being undeluded means to understand and having knowledge of that particular Krishna's position. There is a very nice analogy with this, which points out to that fact, that when we see the sun in the sky, I mean, when there is a daylight, definitely, and because of sun's presence, then we can understand what the sun is, what's happening around us, and definitely then we understand and know who we are. Otherwise, without sun's presence, if we are in some kind of a dark place or in the darkness, then we won't understand who we are. We won't understand anything about the sun, definitely, because of the sun is not present, and we definitely won't understand what is going on around. So in a similar way, when we understand the Krishna, who is compared to the sun, and when we see Krishna or the sun, of course only as it is stated here by the process of devotional service, bhakti mama bijana tyavanyascha smitatvataha tato mam tatvato gyatva visute tadanantaram, then only actually we can of course reach his supreme abode, but we can also understand before that who we are, and especially in the relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So knowing Krishna to be unborn, this is one of the differences actually between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is very important and which leads to that particular understanding that Krishna is unborn. Krishna repeats the same thing here as he had already mentioned this in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. When Arjuna is confused, Krishna is explaining the process of how the knowledge actually was descending. Vivasvan manave praha mano rikshvakave bravit. He explains, Raja vidya raja guyam pavitramidam uttamam pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukam kartumavyam. He actually explains how the knowledge descends through the chain of the disciplic succession, and initially he gave already that knowledge to the sun god some 120 million years ago. And then Arjuna is definitely, as any one of us would be in that particular situation, he was confused. He said, Krishna, how is it possible? He said, how have you spoken this particular knowledge so many millions of years ago? And then Krishna points out, actually, ajopi sam avyayatma, bhutanam ishvaropi sam, prakritim svamadishtaya sambhavam yatma maya. He said, actually, you see, kind of explains to Arjuna, just to paraphrase. My dear Arjuna, I appear in my transcendental body, and my body is not born. I appear every millennium in my transcendental body. This is a very important point. That his body, what Krishna points out, it's not ordinary material body. It is transcendental. And the nature of transcendence is that it is not covered by any kind of knowledge. Ignorance or material knowledge. It is not covered by any material knowledge or ignorance. And therefore, Krishna is able to remember all of his, say, activities or pastimes or whatever he had done in the previously, in whichever point of the time, because his body is transcendental. It's not covered by any point like our body is covered by ignorance. Therefore, Arjuna was naturally confused. As I said, any one of us would be confused in that particular situation. How could Krishna speak that particular knowledge so many millions of years ago? And how could Krishna remember all of these things? So that's Krishna. This is something that Krishna points out. You see, like initially, of course, Arjuna accepted Krishna as his friend, and he was joking with Krishna on the friendly level. But later on, when he understood of real Krishna's position, then he accepted him as his teacher. So only that understanding, actually, of Krishna's real position leads to the point where we accept knowledge, which is given, of course, here to us in Bhagavad Gita, to understand the real position of the living entity in the Krishna himself. And that, of course, leads to ultimate liberation and this undelusion, freeing the living entities from the sinful reaction. So Krishna is not covered at any point by any illusory covering. He said that people here in this material world, they don't know him. Who am I, actually? Because I'm above the modes of the material nature. And that's a very important point. Tribir guna mai bavir, ebim sarvam idam jagat, mohitam nabijanati, mamebhya paramavyayam. So Krishna says, I'm above the modes of the material nature. And that's another very interesting point and very important point, because Krishna is not covered by the modes of the material nature as any other living entity is. And therefore, living entity, because it is covered by the modes of material nature, definitely falls into the delusion and definitely is misguided by so many different kinds of activities and interactions and association with the three modes of the material nature. And he forgets. It's natural for the living entity to forget. Like, we can hardly remember, say, what we have eaten, say, at this particular time a week ago. Can anybody think of it? Can anybody remember? Once, actually, I was in South India, and actually I remember now, one devotee asked the same question in the audience. And actually he didn't ask this, like in this particular evening time, he is giving class in the morning, and he asked, could anyone remember what he was eating a week ago at the same particular time? And then one person raised his hand, and he said, idli and dosa. So actually this kind of argument was defeated, because there it was very simple. You know, some people basically have always the same menu. It's not difficult to forget. It's very easy to forget to remember. But anyway, in general, to point out the fact is that actually our memory is very feeble, our intelligence as well. And we know, manda sumanda matyo manda bhagya, in this world of degradation, and especially in this Kali Yuga age, everything is getting degraded. Memory, intelligence, strength, duration of life, so many different things are mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything is getting degraded. And definitely, especially when we change, but it's pointed out here, with the change of body, we definitely remember, you know, our past life. First of all, we have to understand this is definitely the blessing of the Lord. I mean, if we would be remembering whatever happened in our past life, we will be full of traumatic experiences and phobias. Many times people who have such kind of nightmares or phobias or different kinds of bad experiences, which are influenced by either on the surface level or in the deeper level of the mind, they actually face a lot of problems. Of course, if you kind of do some research on the past life memories, on reincarnation or something like this, you will see that many of the children basically who have such kind of symptoms solve their problem by understanding what was their identity, say, in the previous life. All these kind of phobias are solved in a particular way. And it's interesting. This is how actually we get another proof for the soul's existence beyond this material body, actually in the previous existence. So living entities forgets. It's actually better to forget. Of course, in the case of this particular mental traumas, then it's better. At these particular points, understanding the particular situation that happened to us, then it's beneficial to know. And so, say, in the medical kind of a way and using it as a particular kind of treatment, that this is beneficial to understand some points from the previous life. But otherwise, it's far more beneficial not to remember and not to understand, because anyway, what's the use of remembering and understanding our previous existence? It's all filled with so many terrible experiences. Hardly anything beneficial. Hardly anything beneficial. And therefore, it's Krishna's mercy that we forget. Of course, there are many other scientific reasons which we may point out to our forgetfulness of the previous lifetimes. Okay, just to mention, say, when the living entity, due to the shocking experience, comes out of the womb, it immediately, that shocking experience erases the memory of the previous lives. Although, as it explained in the Bhagavatam, it is fully conscious. After 7th month till the 9th month, the living entity is fully conscious, as described in the Bhagavatam, and prays to the Lord to its deliverance, and promise and makes so many different kinds of promises in order to become a very pious living entity. But somehow or other, again, when he comes out and forgets everything, you know, he doesn't really take to those promises. That's the biggest misfortune. So living entity, due to that shocking experience, when he enters, it's such a pressure, it's such a terrible, shocking experience that the memory gets erased. I don't know if you have ever slept, took some nap, or you were dreaming something, and somebody just suddenly come and shake you, you know, like suddenly woke you up. And did you ever try to remember what you were dreaming in that particular period? Maybe you can try sometimes, or you can try to remember, you know, if somebody just suddenly wakes you up. It's a very shocking, it's a shocking experience, and shock, such kind of experience erases the memory, and you forget things. That's very interesting. So anyway, it's a Krishna's mercy that we forget things that we actually, there is no need to remember all of these things. So it's Krishna's mercy. But again, that difference that we have to point out, it's difference between us and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna remembers everything, and he has very good reason to remember everything, because everything is his pastime, everything is his lila, everything is so wonderful, everything is ever-expanding and ever-blissful. Whereas, again, compared to our existence, it's completely the opposite. So we better forget. As Krishna said, sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matasmitir jnanam apohanam cham. So Krishna gives remembrance, Krishna gives forgetfulness. So it's by his mercy, actually, that we can sometimes remember, or that we can forget particular things. And, of course, he gives the knowledge. The most important thing is that he gives the knowledge to understand that particular position of the living entity in the relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that we are not deluded. That we are in complete understanding of our position of being insignificant, small, and limited compared to the Krishna who is Vibhu, who is great, who is the greatest, who is unlimited practically. And only in that state, as it is mentioned here, person can become free from all the sins. And how is this possible? Because person then understands the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and takes the process of bhakti, thanking, of course, Krishna for giving that and having that particular knowledge about him, means about Krishna and about the living entity. So only in that particular condition, you know, living entity can be freed from the sinful reactions, because then he starts, of course, acting according to instructions of Lord Krishna, which are definitely freeing us from all the sinful reactions. Otherwise, it's not possible. Like Arjuna, he was very much confused initially. And one of his reasons that he didn't want to fight was the argument that he doesn't want to cure any kind of sin. He said, by killing all these millions of people, actually, and especially the elders and very dear members of the family Kuru dynasty, I will incur so many sinful reactions. I will have to dwell in a hell for millions of lifetimes. So this was one of the reasons he didn't want to fight. But Krishna says, of course, sarva dharmam paritya jama mekam sharanam rajaham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshe shami mashuchha. He said, Krishna, don't worry. I will take care of all the sinful reactions, actually. I will take care of everything. You don't have to worry. Just surrender unto me. Give up all the religious, you know, principles practically. Just follow my words. So this is the highest knowledge that a person can acquire, that knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and practicing and following the instructions that he has given. So this is to understand this undiluted position. And of course, to come to that stage, definitely, we said we have to have understanding, we have to have that faith. That, again, as Arjun did initially, when he was thinking Krishna is just my friend. Well, it didn't help. He wasn't still freed from that illusion. You know, he wasn't free. His problems didn't get solved. He was still facing the problem. Like Krishna says, what's the use? Ashochanan vashochastvam pragyavaram chabasha se gata sumagatasum shananu shochanti panditha. Krishna says, you're speaking such a big, big words, like a big pandit, but actually you're a fool, Arjun. You're still facing the same problem. What's the use of all this so-called knowledge? Materialistic knowledge. Knowledge which is under the three modes of the material nature. As Krishna pointed out, Traigunya Vishayaveda Nishtraigunya Bhavarjuna Nidvandva Nitya Sattva Stoni Dyoga Kshema Atmavan. He said, what's the use, Arjuna? You know the Vedas, but this all particular knowledge which you have quoted, you know, so-called codes and principles of morality and dharma, different kinds of dharma, you know, the artha shastras and everything, it's just not helping you. So what is the use of all these things? So then Arjuna, you know, finally figured out, and of course, he surrendered unto the Krishna's will, which is, of course, we have to understand, it is the highest dharma. Whatever comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the highest dharma. And if we follow that, then definitely we'll be, as Arjuna, of course, free from the delusion. But at that initial point, as I said, Arjuna didn't understand actually the Krishna's real position. That's the whole point. This is why Krishna many times has to perform different kinds of activities, unhuman activities, so to say, or different kinds of... He exhibits different kinds of qualities and the pastimes that are definitely not inherent or applicable to any other human being. He makes very clearly that particular discrimination and distinction between him and Jiva as a living entity. Because otherwise we would think, like Arjuna thought, he's just, you know, it's just, of course, we understand that his particular position was in the under Yoga Maya. That is different thing when he considers Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But many other personalities definitely don't take Krishna serious, that they just considered him to be a mortal person. Just one of us, just a little better, a little more self-realized, that's all. But still, he's the, you know, kind of a... he's another human being. He's the greatest, as some people would say, greatest among the human beings. This is, like I said, this and this particular person is the greatest of among all the buffaloes, or something like this. What's the use? Is there any value in such a title? You know, greatest among all the... You're the greatest buffalo among all the other greatest... among the other buffaloes, basically. What kind of title is this? Is this really something that it's kind of, you know, glorious? Not exactly. So being the greatest among the human beings, or greatest among all the other politicians, or the greatest among the kings, or something like this, what's the use of such kind of a title? There is no use. Because considering Krishna a human being is actually a big offense. So it's not something really the greatest. It's not something really flattering to the Krishna. It's not really something very pleasing to Krishna again. Like, basically, we have to understand that the Mayavadi's conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that he comes from the Brahman. That the Brahman is the source of Krishna when he appears in his human form. And that personification of Krishna in his human form is manifested through the sattva-gun, or mode of goodness. So this is how Krishna appears. So he appears through the sattva-gun. So his the manifestation of Brahman in the sattva-gun is the personified form of that Brahman, and that is Krishna. So this is their conception. But of course we understand, as Krishna himself states in Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Brahmanohi pratishtaham amritasya vyasya cha shashvatasya cha dharmasya sukhasyami kartikasya cha. Is that actually that I am source of that Brahman. So how can I come from the Brahman? I am the source of that particular Brahman. So this is not a fact. But of course, people will stick to that particular conception, and therefore we can classify them under these deluded personalities, who are deluded because they don't know who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. And therefore they commit sin. They're not freed from the sinful reactions. And the biggest sinful reaction is actually really to consider Krishna as the mortal, ordinary personality. It's one of the biggest offenses. And therefore, Mayavadis, they never reach any particular, you know, spiritual designation. It's not real spiritual designation. Like, I was I was doing some research when I was in Prabhaspatan. This is in Saurashtra, in Gujarat. And this is the place where actually Krishna left this mortal planet. I mean, he left this material world. When there was a fight between the Yadavas and everybody actually left. By Krishna's arrangement, definitely. And then Krishna arranged for his own departure in such a way that he was kind of meditating in that particular place, and his lotus feet, which was pinkish, is kind of shining through some bushes. When there was a Jara, the hunter, somehow or other he saw it in such a way, and he, thinking it to be a deer, because it has kind of the same color, he was confused by Krishna's illusory energy, yoga maya, and he took his arrow and shot his arrow and shot the Krishna into his foot. So therefore, the Mayavadis, they said actually that Krishna left this world, but he left behind his human body. This was their conception. Actually, I read this. Yes, that this is the official, so to say, guide to the Somnath temple. That's the official explanation of Krishna's departure from this material world. So they say that Krishna left his material body at that particular place. But if you read Srimad Bhagavat Purana, the information is diametrically opposite. It's completely different. There was no any human body. Krishna's body is explained as being a spiritual body. Sachitananda Vigraha. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachitananda Vigraha Nadi Radir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Of course, as such, Krishna's spiritual body again is explained in Taittiriya Upanishad and Gopal Tapani Upanishad. So, but no, the Mayavadis say it wasn't the spiritual body, it's not Sachit Ananda Vigraha, it was Asat Achit and Nirananda Vigraha body. And that body Krishna left, and then he merged back into the Supreme Brahman. So this is their non-Shastric explanation. So this is what they stick on. And definitely how they can be free, how they can be free from any delusion or any sinful reactions when they take to such kind of a misinterpretation of the Shastras. So it's very actually offensive. When I read that statement, I was kind of really taken aback, and I said, wow, this is real Mayavad here, you know, and this every pilgrim who comes there, you know, he reads this stuff and he thinks this is what really happened. Because people don't read, of course, scriptures. They don't read Srimad Bhagavatam. They don't understand what really is mentioned in the scriptures itself. In Bhagavatam, it is mentioned Krishna was sitting in meditative posture, and he didn't do, when he left this material world, he didn't burn his body like yogis do in Agnei meditation. There is Agnei meditation when person immolates himself, you know, by raising the temperature of his body, and just, you know, by this particular temperature, the fire is ignited and he burns his body into the ashes. This is what yogis can do. So it's explained that Krishna didn't do that. You can read in Srimad Bhagavat Purana, 11th canto, last chapter. That's what Krishna didn't do. No, that Krishna just left his world immediately after that particular incident. He just disappeared from this material manifestation. And even more interesting is that even Jara, he sent Jara in the human body, he sent him to the Vaikuntha. Even Jara is gone to the Vaikuntha. So even Jara didn't leave his, even say, to material body there. What to speak of Krishna leaving his material body into that particular place. So this Mayavadi conception is really very sinful and deluding conception. And definitely, according to this verse, it doesn't lead to any further understanding of what we essentially understand from Bhagavad Gita of being Sambandha, Abhideya, or Prayojana, of a relationship with the Lord, the process, and the ultimate goal to achieve the real goal or real destination. And therefore, we're always getting confused. What is the real path on the spiritual life and how to attain actually the real essence and the real benefit of the practicing the spiritual injunctions. Because Krishna, as we understand, he appears, he is described here as beginningless. Interestingly that when we speak about his birth is not like we may say in the purport itself, it said that there are some living entities which are aja, which are unborn. Like Brahma, for example, we may say. Brahma is unborn. He didn't appear from a mother or a father. Like Krishna is unborn. But the difference between Lord Brahma and Krishna, again, is that Brahma has a beginning. Brahma has a beginning. Brahma is created. His body is also part of this material creation. Whereas Krishna is not created. Krishna appears. Krishna appears in this material world, it is said, like a sun. It may disappear from our vision on the horizon, but actually that doesn't mean that the sun has disappeared. Sun keeps on setting and rising all the time, but the only point is it disappears from our vision, but it doesn't mean that the sun has disappeared. Sun is always there in its particular position. It travels around the universe. It travels on the Manasotara mountain, around the Jambudvipa and on which our particular Bharatvarsha or Bharatbhumi is situated. So when it goes from our vision to some other place, it doesn't mean that the sun has disappeared. It doesn't mean when Krishna leaves that he has disappeared. No, it means actually that it's gone from our particular vision. It means our vision is imperfect. This is what it means. And he always appears in a particular time. It's interesting. Like a sun in the morning, you know, it appears at a particular time, at a particular time of year, every day. So similarly, Krishna appears in a particular time. He has his scheduled appearance, you know, like some kind of a schedule. His incarnations are scheduled. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata bhutana madharmasya tadatmanam srijami aham paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chadushkitam dharma sanstapanatya sambhavami yuge yuge. Yuge yuge means every millennium after millennium. In every kalpa, Krishna appears. Not just in kalpa, in every manvatara. And different kinds of incarnations appear many more times, and some incarnations appear more rarely. But Krishna as the Svayam Bhagavan actually appears once in a day of Brahma. So Krishna appears, his incarnations are scheduled. And here his appearance is not the appearance because of, as I mentioned in those particular verses in the fourth chapter, it's not just to save the devotees or to kill the miscreants or the demons or to reestablish the principles of religion. But his appearance is also very much connected to the devotion that his devotees exhibit. So devotion is the motivating factor for the Lord to appear. Like we know, Advaita Acharya, when he was calling for the Supreme Lord, it was the devotion that which he was invoking the Lord to appear on this particular planet. He was just offering what? Tulsi leaf and the water, Ganges water on the Shalagram. That was all what he was offering, but he was offering it with devotion. And only because of devotion, Krishna appears. That's the only reason. All the other mentioned things Krishna can do through his agencies or different kind of representatives. He doesn't have to come personally. It's not necessary for him. So he appears because of devotion. And very nice analogy in this regard is given as like fire inherently is present in every wood, right? As we know, Krishna, we may say it's present everywhere, in each and every atom as Paramatma basically. So similarly, fire is inherently present in each and every wood. But when we stir the wood, actually that's when the fire appears. So similarly, actually what stirs the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that bhakti, is the devotion, it's the chanting, it's the devotional service. is that particular process that we practice that actually, you know, invokes the Lord's presence. Krishna says, I'm present on the tongues of the devotees who chant my holy name. This is where I am. I'm not here, I'm not there, I'm in the hearts of the devotees who chant my holy name. This is where Krishna is present. This is how he appears. So knowing that difference and between the living entity and the Krishna himself, and understanding how he appears because of devotion, like we know how he appeared in the when we discuss about birth and Krishna's ajam, like here it is mentioned, and his appearances. Krishna appeared in Mathura. It was because of devotion of Vasudev. It wasn't because of any other basically reason. He appeared in his heart and then he was transferred to the mind of the Vasudev. And from the mind, Krishna was transferred to the mind of the Devaki. And this is how Krishna was actually conceived and how he manifested himself. It wasn't like any kind of ordinary conception or ordinary birth that took place there. And Devaki represents bhakti. And bhakti, which actually was manifested through the fear, Kamsa is representing fear from the material association. So out of that fear of the material association, fear of Kamsa, the Devaki's bhakti matured. Actually, it was always practically there. But because of that bhakti, Krishna was manifested. And when it was manifested, in particular, when all the anarthas were annihilated or killed, and those anarthas were represented by the six sons of Maricha, six children that Kamsa had killed previously, Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. And then Balaram sets in, as we know, as the Shesha, as the seventh child that appeared. And he always makes before Krishna, and that's the role of Balaram, he makes all kinds of different arrangements for Krishna to appear. He always assists Krishna in such a way. He's his paraphernalia. And then Krishna appears as the eighth child, when everything is set up. So, but the initial point is that bhakti, is the devotional call of his devotees. This is where Krishna appeared. So therefore, knowing all these Krishna's principles and activities, like Krishna says, janma karma chamedi vyam evam yoveti tatvataha tyatva deham punarjanma naitima meti. So Arjuna, is there actually one who knows about my activities? One who knows about my divyam, transcendental janma, transcendental appearance? Then such a person becomes eligible to enter into the spiritual world. And definitely, he enters into the spiritual world. So this is something that we understand. It is very important, as mentioned here in this world, that such person, then only at that particular point, can be free from all the sinful reactions. And definitely, what is the result of that? Knowing Krishna to be who he actually is, Supreme Personality of Godhead, and knowing our position and in relationship to him, and definitely acting properly, which frees us from all sinful reactions, enable us further to reach the ultimate supreme goal. This is, you know, what? Golok Vrindavan, Vaikuntha. That's what it is. So this is what is basically described in this particular world. There are a couple of other points, but I don't know if we should go to this is basically the essence. So Hare Krishna, is there any question or comment maybe somebody would like to ask? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Nice lecture. So, like, we have fallen from the spiritual world.
Can you speak a little louder? I can't hear.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We are the living entities, the part and parcel of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So we have fallen from the spiritual world into the material world. Mm-hmm. So we are the sparks. Mm-hmm. The Krishna is like a fire. So do we have a spiritual body which is covered by this material body?
Mm-hmm. We have spiritual body
which is covered by this material body. So when do we acquire that spiritual body? We cannot see that body. So how to, like...
Mm-hmm.
So when we reach the destination and when we reach our spiritual body...
Okay.
And become free from this material body.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole point is, spiritual body is already there. Just it's covered. The whole point is that I hope everybody heard the question. Yeah, okay, fine. So the point is that living entity, first of all, have to be freed from all the material desires. It has to be freed from all the karmic reactions, pious or impious. It has to act, actually, the only activity when spiritual, when living entity acts on the platform of akarma, means the devotional service of the Supreme Lord, and definitely in this way it's freed from both karma or vikarma, means pious or sinful activities. Like here, we are discussing about freedom from all the sins. So only at that point, actually, you don't acquire anymore the material body. And not acquiring material body means that living entity is purified. The whole process is now to become a purified, to get rid of all unnecessarily baggage that we are carrying. Because soul is, you know, like it's kind of entrapped. It's in the cage. The whole point is just to get out of this particular cage, and here you are. You're already there. You don't have to acquire anything else. You're already spirit, soul. What happened only is that you have become enwrapped, you know, with the particular elements of this material nature. Bhumi, apu, analova, yuka, mana, buddhi, deva, chahankara, itiyame, bina, prakriti, rashtada. Five gross elements and three subtle elements. You have become entrapped within that. So the whole point is you just have to get rid of this particular, you know, cage or enwrapment, or how to say. You know, you have to get rid of this particular unnecessary baggage that you're carrying. And that is where the living entity becomes free. And automatically just realizes who he is. Because the point when the living entity comes to the spiritual world, he also starts associating with the modes of the material nature. You see, when living entity, again, the difference between Lord Krishna and the living entity is that the living entity is under influence of time, it's under influence of karma, and it's under influence of the three modes of the material nature. Whereas the Supreme Lord is not. As I was quoting, Tribirguna Mahibarvi, Krishna is above the three modes. He's definitely not under influence of karma, and he's definitely not under influence of time. Because even while being 125 years old, he looked like a 16-year-old boy. It's not like some kind of a other religious conception that God is, you know, some kind of old man with a beard, because he's so old, so he has to have a beard. You know, and that's interesting. Actually, I don't know, because he's old as he's, you know, if you kind of analyze this, it doesn't make sense. You can really see it's kind of a part of the theosophy. Theosophy means it is just a mental speculation about the theology. Theology is real science of God, to know the science of God. But theosophy is trying to speculate on the basis of some kind of spiritual information, how particular things happen in the spiritual life. So what Srila Prabhupada said, what is actually what they considered Western theology, Srila Prabhupada actually said it's not theology, it's a theosophy. It's a speculation about the existence and the knowledge of God. So it's theosophy. So they say that God is the oldest, so he's kind of, you know, he appears, he's, you know, he must have been young, and now he's old. But then what will happen in the future? Because as we understand from that particular principle, trying to apply the material conception to God, that means, you know, he'll have to completely dwindle and die if he's old. It's kind of completely, utterly wrong conception. Anyway, another point is the God, because he's the most powerful, omnipresent, omnipotent. He's omnipotent, so he's most powerful, you know, so he has to have some muscles. Anyway, it's a completely wrong conception, basically. Even logically, so to speak. What to speak shastrically, what we understand from the Vedic scriptural points. So to understand the difference between God and living entity is a very, very essential thing. And God doesn't, you know, it doesn't fall under that influence of time, as I said, especially not of the gunas and the karma. So when he comes, he's not enwrapped in anything here. He doesn't come, like as I was mentioning, like Mayavadis say, he doesn't come under the influence of sattva guna, and this is how his material body is manifested. No, he's immediately there. He's, you know, as we were talking about Devaki and Vasudeva, how he appeared. He's not like any ordinary child, you know. Anyway, I won't give you a description. Most of you must just can imagine, you know, how it happens, what it happens. Even mother won't touch it, you know, before it's not washed with the Dettol soap or something. Anyway, afterwards. So it just doesn't appear like this, you know. That's the whole point. He appeared as in a form, armed form, with a helmet, you know, with all the weapons. Anyway, so who appears like this? So Krishna's like birth, you know, Krishna's experience is completely, you know, different than anybody else's. So he doesn't become enwrapped or under the influence of anything here in this material world. Not like we. But when we come, because we have to associate, because this is our nature, it's our tatashta shakti, then we definitely come under the influence either of the bahiranga shakti or antaranga shakti. But usually when we come to material world, means we come under the influence of the three modes of material nature. And this is how we acquire. From the subtle bodies, we go, you know, further, deeper, deeper, deeper. We are falling down and acquiring the grosser material bodies. So this is the difference. Is that okay? Anything else? Okay. Jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.